dann holt Station to come online. Of course, Kim gets it in stereo. Okay, Kim is going to speak about what I call auto-IANA, and IANA has recently introduced a workflow automation system, so he'll give us a little bit of a talk and a little bit of a demonstration about it.
Thanks very much. What I intend to do is give a fairly basic overview of this system and a simple demonstration on the basis that you probably have much more interesting questions to ask me than I can think of to tell you. So feel free to ask me questions, and I should be able to answer almost all of them. So just as a bit of background, we deployed a system we call the RZM system, Root Zone Management System. This system effectively manages the entire workflow of the root zone updating process. This system has been a long time coming. We started talking about it a long time ago in the CCTLD community. I was working at Centre at the time. I remember discussions around 2003. Work at ICANN began in earnest on such a system around 2006. We developed it over the course of about 3 years. And then in the last 2 years, we've had a prolonged testing regime, as well as some refinements being done to the system. But as of today, the RZM system is fully deployed. All TLD managers have been invited to use the system. The system has actually been functioning since the start of the year, and I'll get to a bit more detail in a minute. And since the start of the year, all root zone changes that have been placed into the system have been implemented successfully. At the start of the year, we began a process of what we call parallel operations. In effect, whenever we got a root zone change from a TLD manager, we processed it twice. We performed the conventional manual process that we'd always done. We also entered it into this new system and effectively ran the processes side by side. The net result is that we tracked how the system process changes, made sure it performed in the same way that our manual process would, and most importantly, we took the root zones that were generated out of both the manual and the automated processes and compared them. So the test of successful operation effectively is, do they generate the same data? And that was the key criterion for success. Now, after successfully qualifying the system, on 21st of July, we cut over the system to full operation. This means that the system was now primary rather than the manual process. We still conducted everything in tandem for a little while, but as of 21st of July, the root zone automation system was primary. We provided advance notification we're going to do this at the Singapore meeting, and followed that up with direct emails to TLD managers and other notifications. And, you know, the cutover happened on schedule. It went exactly as we'd expected. So on that July 21st date, what actually happened was that VeriSign, in their role as publisher of the root zone data, the root zones that started being pushed to the root servers on that day were taken from the automated system rather than the manual system. Another thing that happened starting July 21st is that for TLD managers that were doing changes, until that date, if you had an issue or you were being asked to confirm a change, ICANN staff would write to you in a manual process asking you to consent, asking you to check a technical issue, and so on. As of July 21st, they were all system originated. So the automated system now emails TLD managers about the status of their request, asking them to confirm requests and notifying technical problems with the request. One thing we didn't launch, though, on July 21st was a new web-based interface for TLD managers to interact with the system. The reason we didn't initially provide access to the web system is we wanted to do it over an extended period in order to be able to cope with support challenges that might come with rolling out access. So invitations were actually issued over a 1.5 month period, starting on 1st of August and ending on 15th of September. Every TLD contact, both CC and GTLD, was invited to participate and had 30 days to claim the username and password to access the system. So there was 474 TLD contacts as of that time. 40.7 accepted the invitation, claimed the username and password, and now able to use that web-based system. And just in terms of adoption of the web-based interface, the first columns reflect the total number of root zone changes we receive, averaging typically about 50 per month, and then spiking up to 74 just in the first half of October. Now, via email, obviously, all of them came via email until we started introducing the web-based interface. And, from September onwards, definitely the majority of requests are now coming via the web-based interface. From October 1st to October 15th, we had 23 via email and 51 lodged via the web interface. So what are the pieces of the system? It's actually a multi-part system. We generally call it RZM for the purposes of discussion, but it's actually multiple independent systems that talk to each other via various APIs. This was done for a variety of reasons, primarily, of course, being there's actually multiple organizations here. There's ICANN's piece, there's VeriSign's piece, there's NTIA's piece. And then also from the ICANN perspective, we have the user-focused service, the one that you log into, you submit changes, and then also the internal service, which runs the workflow that staff interact with via an admin-style interface. The key four pieces are those. The user service, this is where you as a TLD manager can log in and submit changes. You can also track the status of an existing change. This internal service manages the status of tickets. It performs all the actions required on a transaction. It allows staff to interact with the system to perform staff's functions. And then, importantly, we actually integrate with VeriSign's system over EPP. So the ICANN service effectively acts as the EPP client, whereas the VeriSign system acts as the EPP server. I think I've probably already touched on all these already, but one of the key things about root zone management system is not so much the web-based interface, which I think for you is one of the most tangible benefits of the system, but it's actually that the entire workflow is run through the system. And what we've done is we've looked at all the steps through the process and which of those steps can be done by an automated system rather than manually. So technical checks, for example, can be automated. So in the system, rather than having staff perform manual technical checks, although in the past we used tools to help us, of course, the system fully performs all the technical checks automatically. There's no staff involvement in how the technical checks are performed. Similarly, because we do all the contact confirmations initially via email, all of those are done by the system automatically. Now, there are occasions where we need to do out-of-band contact confirmations via telephone, via exchange of letters, that kind of thing. That obviously still needs to be done manually by staff, but that's not the default. If it escalates to that point and needs to be done, then it will become manual. But wherever possible, the process is automated. And the new web interface, as I mentioned, provides new methods of working for TLD managers. In the past, TLD managers could send us an email primarily, but you could also send us a fax or otherwise manually submit a request. But now TLD managers have a web-based interface. They can log in. They can submit an interface, submit through an interface, which I think is fairly intuitive and helps the submission process. And then once submitted, you can actually log back in and see where is my request at, what's happening, and so forth. So that's kind of the broad overview, and what I'm actually going to do now is just briefly jump into the system, just for those that haven't already used it, to get a sense of how it looks for a TLD manager. So if I jump onto a web browser, it's available at rzm.iana.org. You come to rzm.iana.org, you get conventional login page. What I'm going to do to illustrate is actually log in as the IANA user account. Now, IANA actually manages 13 domains in the root zone. So we actually, we're effectively a TLD manager as well. So in that context, I can log in to the system and see the domains that I manage. I will say it seems to be a little slow. I think it's the V6 connectivity is a bit shabbier than the V4 connectivity. So, please bear with the delays. Helps if I remember my password. Actually, it helps if I remember my username. All right, there we go. So unfortunately, it scrolls a bit off to the right, but when you log into the system, the first thing you're presented with is a list of the domains that you are assigned permission to be responsible for. So in this case, IANA is responsible for merely being the technical contact for .ARPA, but also we're both the administrative and technical contact for .INT, as well as the 11 test IDNs that are currently in the root. So in this initial view, you can see the domains that you manage, the roles that you have. You can see when the domain was last updated. And then most importantly, you have this review/edit function, which is the primary method of updating these domains. If you scroll down further, you can see whatever outstanding requests you already have. And then also you see down here your glue records requests. Now, this will be updated in the next revision to make it clearer what this means. But effectively what it means is if another TLD makes a change to a name server that you also use, for example, changes the IP addresses, you need to also confirm that change. Now, because you didn't initiate the request, we've separated it out. But if you share a name server with another TLD and that TLD's made a change, it will show up down here. But we'll clarify the language so it's crystal clear what exactly that means. So if we go over to one of the domains that we manage, perhaps this last one, and click Review Edit, it'll bring up a new page where I think it's kind of the heart of this new interface. Effectively what it is it will show you a view of what's in the IANA database and allow you to edit it at your will. Now, first thing you'll notice is a request is pending for this domain. Edits are disabled until the currently outstanding request is resolved. That's true. I'd actually done another demo yesterday and I still have a request pending, so I'll just skip out of that and go back to the overview and choose one of the other many domains at my disposal to try. You can see down here that domain has an outstanding request. So let's try this one instead. So here's a standard domain without any outstanding requests. So what we see here is really the view you see via the whois or via the IANA website. You see the administrative, technical contact, sponsoring organization. For the ones that you manage, it makes it clear that this reflects you right now. Shows you the name servers. For the ones that are shared, that would result in one of those glue request changes, they're highlighted with a dot at the start. Shows the trust anchors and URL, whois, so on. So what you do is if you want to make a change, all you do is for whatever section you want to do change, you just click Add Edit Record. Now, when I'm in here, I can just make whatever changes I like. For the sake of illustration, let's transfer administrative control of this domain to Eberhard. I don't know what his his address is, so I'll just leave that as is. But he's already done it for me, so.
On the dot NA.
There we go. And I'm guessing not the United States, but in Namibia. All right. So, I mean, I'll just leave it at that for the purpose of the demonstration. So we can go save changes here. That will take me, actually, it doesn't do really anything. It just takes me back to this main page. Now, the first thing you'll notice is that it highlights what you've changed. So at an immediate glance right now, I can see what my proposed edit would look like. But what it hasn't done is submitted anything. At the top, it has this new box that shows you've made changes to the view below. When you're ready, what you do is you go here and go complete change request. So this allows you to go back, and now if I want to do a name server change as well, I can do that now too. I can do various edits, or I can just look at that and go, oh, I'm not quite, that's, I made a typo there. I can go and edit it once more, update it again. But once I'm, you know, satisfied that these are all the changes I want to do, I go up here and hit complete. I can also back out the changes by hitting cancel as well. But let's say that's exactly what I want to do. I'll go here and hit complete. So the first thing it will do is provide you with an explanation of the summary of the changes as an enumerated list. So here we say, it says, you know, number one, it's going to update the contact address over to the new address. Number two, the country will change from United States to Namibia. Number three, contact name will change as well. Now, typically we have this role that we call a requester, which is independent of the AC and the TC, which is the person that actually submitted the request. So for me, I can put, for example, my name because I'm submitting it. So if I add my email address here, I'll get notifications throughout the course of this request in addition to the administrative and technical contacts. So, you know, if a particular staff member in an organization does it and wants to track the change, this is where they add in their contact address. So I then proceed forward. So this is an indication of success. So what's happened now is the change request has actually been lodged. It's been entered into the system. And now the system will take that request and start processing it via the conventional methodology we've always used, but obviously with a lot of automation, so it should go a lot quicker. But it will perform conformance checks, it will do technical checks, although in this case, because it's a contact change, no name servers are being changed, and so on and so on. So if I click back to overview, I should see this new outstanding request. Now, the first thing we do is we actually ask the admin and tech contacts to consent to the change. So what's happened just in the minute since we submitted it, the admin and tech contact have received an email asking them to consent to this change. It's currently pending them to consent. Once they consent, it will move through the process. One additional feature that we always had, but it was obviously a manual process, is that if I, as a TLD manager, want to change my mind, I can just simply click withdraw. If I click withdraw, the request will be cancelled. So if throughout the processing, until the processing is finalised, you can back out of the change pretty easily. But let's go into the actual request. We can hit view. So if we hit view, we can see current status, what's happened. We can also look here and see who's confirmed. And we see here these are actually checkboxes, but neither are ticked. So it means both the administrative and technical contact have not yet consented to the change. So that's kind of a general overview of it. One of the sample requests I did yesterday was actually for a name server change. So let's just look at that one, and I just clicked the wrong thing. Just bear with me. If we go click view on that other name server change, we can see that in this case, because I changed the name servers to be an invalid set, the first thing it did is it detected problems because the NS record set in the apex of the zone did not match what I'd entered into RZM. So these issues were flagged via the system, and right now it's pending tech check remedy, which means that TLD manager is asked to fix any problems with the request. Now, if you get a technical check failure like this, you can either fix it and wait. I think the system rechecks once an hour, so after an hour, it should redetect it. It should be correctly configured and it will move on. Or you can force a retesting by clicking Recheck Name Servers. And if we move further down, we see here the request history. That was the first state that it entered. So it started on the 23rd. But let's go back to a view of a request that we've actually completed. If we go right down to the bottom, we have this button, View Past Requests. And you can see here a record of all the requests that have been processed through the system. Now, since we started using this towards early in the year, it just reflects changes that have been made through the system. Depending on the priority you guys place on it, we might backfill it with historical requests. But for now, it just has requests from this year. And you can see here basically the reference number, the domain that reflects, when it was, when the request was logged, when it was started, who created it, current status, obviously most of them are completed, and when the last change was made. So, but if we look at one of the ones that's completed, let's look at this second last one. So in this case, it was a key rollover or adding keys for this particular domain. So we see what the request involved. We see that that request got confirmations from both the admin and tech contact. And then, importantly, we see the request history. So, on this particular occasion, everything was done on the same day. But you should be able to walk through the request based on its state. In the beginning, tech check remedy. There was obviously some issue that got fixed. Contact confirmation. And so on and so on. So if you look at a request that's ongoing or completed for you, you should be able to see the entire transaction history and when those aspects of the change were completed. And you can do this in real time, so you can check an active request that has not yet been completed to get an understanding of where your request is at right now. So I've probably missed some of the features, but I think that's probably a general overview of what the system does for you in terms of this new web-based interface. But I just wanted to emphasize that, you know, it's really two key pieces. One is automation, workflow automation, and that's irrespective of this web interface. Any request that's submitted goes to this new automation system. And then additionally, we have this new web-based system for you to interact with, which any TLD manager can use. All you need to do is obtain a username and password from us to access the system. So just jumping back to my slides. Just a little on future work. I mean, I think key is iterating the product based on the feedback we receive. I won't pretend that it's the most perfect system. I think it's a great step forward. But undoubtedly, there'll be some issues TLD managers have, whether the system is not very clear, whether we can just make it even more streamlined. So we really appreciate that kind of feedback so we can iterate the service. Another big consideration is that one of the limitations we put on the initial system was we only provide the web-based interface to credentialed users, which means that existing TLD managers that already manage the domain get to submit requests. But with a new gTLD program coming, we anticipate we're going to receive many applications for new TLDs. Now, new TLDs are clearly not existing TLDs and they're not credentialed. So how do we integrate that workflow in so there's an interface for new TLD managers that have passed the evaluation process? How do they get entered into the root zone, and how can we make that as streamlined as possible? So that's part of the upcoming work as well. But, you know, for this community, I'd say primarily give us your feedback and hopefully we can iterate the product to better suit your needs. So that's my summary, and very happy to answer any questions.
Okay, Nigel.
Well, first of all, I think it's a great step forward. I'm surprised it's taken 9 years or whatever, 8 years that you... but, I mean, that's history. There are some fundamental problems with it. There is one fundamental problem that I can see from a technical perspective. Although both of these are policy decisions that have been taken unilaterally by IANA over the years. The first one And least of the two is the requirement for the admin and technical contacts to be able to veto the clearly expressed wishes of the CCTLD manager. Now, most European CCTLD managers, the technical and admin contacts are employees of the CCTLD manager. But we all know that historically worldwide there are plenty of different situations. That's the first point. The second point, from a technical perspective, is even worse. And that is the requirement that has appeared over the last few years out of nowhere, that every CCTLD manager that uses a particular name server has the right of veto to a change of the IP address of the name server. If you go back to the database before ICANN took it over, it was run by Network Solutions. The owner of the object relating to the name server was the name server operator itself, who may not even have been the CCTLD manager. It may have been an ISP. It may have been a volunteer. Where you have new GTLDs coming along and companies such as back-end providers, even ourselves may be doing that, you may have a situation whereby you have 200 or 300 TLDs using the same name server. And so when the back-end provider tells you that the name server that he operates has just changed its IP address, and you don't change that IP address until you wait until you get the 200 or 300 confirmations, that's impractical and broken.
Where to begin? Well, you know, the first thing, I mean, I agree, it's policy. You know, we implemented the procedures as they already existed. We can have a debate about that, I'm happy to, but I don't think that really relates to the system. It's just an implementation of current practices. Likewise for the second issue. I will say that I personally have recognised both those issues, and my suggestion, informally, admittedly, for the first issue would be to actually completely separate the notion of admin and tech contacts with authorizers. So you have, using a system like this to support that, but let's make the admin and tech contacts purely for who is listing purposes only, and then it allows a TLD manager to list, like, customer support numbers or whatever the case may be. And then independently of the admin and tech contacts, let the CCTLD manager have 1 to N, it could be 10, it could be 20, it could be 1, authorizers that are kept in a private database. You can log in and see who's connected to your TLD TLDs, but it's not published in the whois, that these are the authorizers for change requests. And you maintain that independently of the admin and tech contacts. So that's my personal view, but, you know, I don't get to decide such things.
If I can just comment on that suggestion, I think that's a marvelous suggestion. And if you extend that to name servers and separate them from CCTLDs, then that would fix all the problems.
Well, you know, I think name servers is a more challenging problem because effectively we don't have trust relationships with name server operators, and to establish them is difficult. So, well, you know, I think there's a couple of other ways you can address it. I mean, that's the cleanest way from a conceptual point of view. But from a practical point of view, having host objects and having a completely separate database of, I think there was like 800 individual hosts in the grid zone last I checked. And so having 800 additional contacts that we maintain completely independently and which actually have a large overlap with TLD managers. So, you know, one TLD might have NS1.TLD, NS2, and then if we're meant to maintain different host objects that all get maintained independently, for the normal case, that actually makes things a lot more complex. Now, one thing that we've certainly considered as well is can we encourage a policy development so that rather than having 100% acceptance by the impact of TLDs, that we have some threshold-based system where 25% or something like that, where the reason why we have 100% acceptance requirement for glue changes is the notion that if it changed without the TLD being aware of the change, it can actually result in lameness, because if the TLD doesn't correctly update to reflect the new IP address, the change of the IP address might result in updates no longer going to the name server. And, you know, that stems from another issue, which is that a lot of TLD managers don't have ongoing relations with the name servers they use. We have name server operators coming to us saying, the TLD manager doesn't even talk to me, and I'm one of the authorities for their name. So there's an issue there that's broader than just what ICANN does. It's that there's a lack of communication between all the parties. And, you know, this is one manifestation of it, but there's others as well.
Well done, Kim. I think this is a very impressive product. And I, for one, think it is more important that it is done correctly than done quickly, so I'm not too bothered by the length of time it's taken to do it. On this particular issue of name servers, I would urge you not to change the system at all. I think that the integrity of the root zone is benefited by not having shared IP addresses for name servers or shared name server names, and every TLD that uses a shared one should have its own vanity IP address or domain name for it. And any system that makes it exceptionally difficult for people to share the same names and IP addresses is therefore a good thing if it forces best practice on people as the way to avoid the complexity of that system. Thanks.
Yeah, actually, I was going to make that point and I forgot. I mean, you can easily avoid the situation by just giving another host name to the IP address. I mean, it's not shared name servers per se, it's shared host names. That's the issue.
Actually, that is an extremely good idea, and maybe IANA could actually go through its database and try and encourage that to happen.
I fear we'll get in trouble for doing things that's beyond our mandate.
We've spoken about this by email. Why are these usernames so confusing to me? The usernames are assigned by the system, and they're not really easy to remember, so I have to keep them on my laptop.
So the reason... we generated random usernames and passwords. We eliminated the characters, zeros and O's, ones and L's that can be confused, but, you know, effectively they're random. The reason we did it is simple, so that we didn't have to ask all the TLD managers before we issued credentials what they want their username to be. But also, you know, a thought that one of the challenges we have with IANA in general is a wide range of technical aptitude with the audience. I mean, there's very skilled experts in the field, and there's like ministers of communication that have no idea what it is that they're responsible for. And, you know, sorry for being blunt, but we have to assume that at least some TLD managers will choose easy-to-guess passwords or something that's, you know, not particularly safe. And the suggestion was, why don't we have AC-TLD, TC-TLD? And I think once you have a username that is a clear pattern where you know the username you're trying to compromise and there's potentially a relatively weak password, I think you've just made it a lot easier. But that being said, I know security-wise, that is not a particularly good security policy to rely on. So I don't know. I mean, this is one thing we're happy to have feedback on. If the random username issue is a problem, we could certainly add functionality where you can update and change your username to a username of your choosing. But I guess I was reluctant to have an established pattern like AC-NA or TC-NA as the starting point for usernames.
Hi, Kim. Jörg Schweiger, DENIC. Now that we see a couple of automation islands, I would call them, split between the different involved sites, do you see that we as CCTLD managers will be able to determine or predict when a change in the root zone is really taking place?
It's a good question. I think it's a little early to tell just based on the way it's gone. You know, fundamentally, the broader issue is that ICANN doesn't control the whole process flow. And furthermore, our partners don't have commitments to the community about how long they'll take. I know I don't want to speak authoritatively. I know VeriSign's contract with NTIA, I think, believes they'll execute a rezone change within 3 business days or something like that. But, you know, in practice, it's actually quite a lot shorter. One of the interesting things that automation means is that changes happen generally quicker, but there's less lead-up time, so there's less time for TLD to prepare, perhaps. And we've run into this a couple of times where TLD managers want a pretty good level of certainty exactly when a change request is going to happen. One thing I certainly haven't discussed with VeriSign and NTIA, but I know I've been discussed in hallway conversations, is the notion that maybe we should introduce a not-before time. So we can't control exactly when it will happen, but if a TLD submits it well in advance and they specify a not-before timestamp and they say, I don't want this in the root zone any time before this particular date, then, you know, you can go through all the formalities right up to implementation, and then through some mechanism that I guess VeriSign would have to implement, they would stay implementation until that date, which point they'd insert into the root zone. So as a TLD manager, if I submitted a change today and I say not before tomorrow because I want it done tomorrow, I mean, clearly it will take longer than that and we can't control that. But if you plan ahead and say, I'm going to do a transition on, you know, the 1st of December, I submit it well in advance, I do everything right, and it will just stay in the system till at the very last step and on the 1st of December be executed. Maybe that would be helpful for the kind of scheduling that TLD managers might want to do. So I just flagged that. But, you know, fundamentally the issue is I think it will improve timeliness. I think it'll be much more, you can make a much better estimate as to when it'll be implemented, but it doesn't provide absolute certainty as to when a change will be executed.
Just quickly say something about that. I would like to have the policy decisions taken earlier, but the actual technical check must wait for the shortly before the implementation because situations can change.
Actually, we already thought of that. And in fact, that was our process in the manual process as well. We actually have what we call technical check at the very beginning, then we have supplemental check at the very end. And this is, I mean, less to do with routine changes, but you know, if we do something like a redelegation that might take months, clearly, technical situation might change. So we do check at both ends of the request.
So you said one solution might be just to make sure that any change to the root zone would not appear before a certain date. Well, wouldn't it be an option as well to pick any time you feel comfortable with, like a service level standard, maybe 7 days or 3 days or 4 days or whatever, just you feel comfortable with that the process can be done within that certain period in time, and that you really would offer an interface that would be applicable for ccTLD managers to really state, I want the process being done in this certain point of time. And just what I'm trying to make clear is my issue is not that I would have to have it really fast. My issue is that I want to really determine when it's going to be changed. And I think that could be managed if you would be able just to pick the amount of time you think that would be needed between the different parties involved.
So, again, we're challenged because we have 2 other parties that they're not committed to us to perform it in a particular amount of time. So, VeriSign is committed to NTIA, and, you know, NTIA has their own process. For the stuff ICANN does, I mean, I think we probably could do on the basis that that a request is fully formed and doesn't fail any of the acceptance tests. I think what will be more useful, though, is, you know, when we've done automation for a longer period than just the last 2.5 months, that we that particularly, you know, assuming ICANN is successful in obtaining the next IANA contract, that there's provisions in there that we can do more detailed statistical reporting than we do already. So perhaps we can have graphs of averages of all the different steps of the process and how long they typically take for everyone averaged out. So then we might not be able to give you that kind of commitment, but we can say, very clearly say, on average, like 80% of requests take 1 to 2 days, and, you know, the remaining 20% take on average, you know, 8 to 10 days, or whatever the case may be. I think that's not the kind of commitment you're asking for, but I think that would also help you have a better sense of how long we think it will take.
Merci, monsieur.
Thank you, Mr. Kim, for your brilliant presentation. My name is Bube Boka. I am in education system. It's the first time that I present in one of these forums with ICANN. My question is such. I would like to know the process system of delegation, because in Chad, we have started these processes for a year. Right now, we are in the first phase of the process. Could ICANN help us so the transfer would be faster? Because between those time, our servers are broken down. ICANN had asked us that we redo a review of the equipment. This is what we are doing right now, revising the equipment. There are other conditions once in a while that ICANN requires. After this forum, if you could help us more for this in this task, and I would thank you. Of course. Oh.
The redelegation process is quite separate from everything I've just described. But our role is to facilitate the process. So anything we can do to provide assistance in explaining the process, providing understanding of what the requirements are, we're very happy to do. One of the key challenges when we do a redelegation is not hearing from applicants. They don't ask questions. They go off and do their own thing, assuming to understand the process, maybe with incorrect assumptions, and come back having spent a lot of effort on something that doesn't quite match with what we're looking for. So, you know, our goal is not to delay any process, and we're very happy to help. But there is a limit. I mean, our role is to be neutral. We're not there to advocate a particular party inside the country involved in a redelegation against others. So particularly in the case of a transfer, I mean, we don't take sides. We can't get too involved, but we're happy to explain process, provide neutral advice on how redelegations can be conducted in the fastest way achievable.
If I understand this correctly, you want process of redelegation. I would propose that you public framework working group where we are looking at issues, and it's Thursday afternoon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, this is what I ask for.
On the program somewhere. Look under Framework of Interpretation Working Group.
Okay.
Okay.
So now, no more questions. Now comes the embarrassing part, in that the host presenter hasn't pitched up. He is probably detained in the... I met him in the General Assembly, so he's probably listening to the President's speech, which basically means we'll break for lunch and we'll meet at 2 o'clock for the roundtable on CCTLDs being or not affected by GTLDs and the other way around, which Norm Ritchie is going to moderate. Thank you very much. My understanding is that Sira pays for a boxed lunch for us. We could Shanghai somebody from the .ca now to give us a plug for that. But I don't exactly know the mechanism. I assume that they brought some cool drinks here.